Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I'm doing well. My wife, Holly, is still on the road helping the good folks over at Exxon get some work done in Texas, and my sophomore is ordering her class ring this morning, so lots of excitement
really?
at the
Payton
house.
Class ring time.
Yeah. So this is going to be a fantastic segment brought to you, as always, by our good friends over at Training Pros. We have with us in the studio today from SunTrust, Mr. Wayne Zitch. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. You are a talent development executive. Am I getting that right?
Generally, that's the direction that we're going with that, sure.
So what does one of those do to earn their keep?
Well, I've been at SunTrust for 4 years, and my title has changed about four times,
right.
So it's hard to keep up with those things. I was asked for a business card earlier today. I was like,
nah.
I don't carry them anymore. You can link in with me if you really want to and keep up with my titles. So we have talent development and talent management. I work on the talent development side, which is historically called training. And so, really, I manage the build process and maintenance process for all the assets that we have for the company. So, you know, we've got literally thousands of courses and curriculum and other things, job aids that we give out. How do we make sure we leverage that? Because it's actually a financial asset on some level. So, you know, making sure that comes through. We work with vendors to bring in specific needs. If it's sales training, we bring in specific, you know, Richardson for sales training. He has kind of been the best of breeds.
I'm going to have to bill Richardson for that.
Yeah, well, they do a good job for us. So it's that kind of thing. I work with a partner that deals with the requirements gathering. So she brings in the requirements. I source the materials. We build the materials. Then we have the implementation partner that actually delivers with the trainers and such.
So now in banking, there's a sales element?
Yes.
You're out there selling.
Yes. Well, every time you walk into a branch, it's a sales opportunity.
Is that how you look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, in terms of your needs, yeah, I mean, if you walk into a bank, most people are underserved in terms of their financial products.
Mm-hmm.
And you just probably don't know it. You know, and so it's a question of, and also, you know, what people have learned over the last 5 years is that they're not in tune with their finances. They should be. And it's actually really important to how they live their life. And so one of the core mission of SunTrust is really to help people shine. That's kind of our marketing mantra. And, you know, it's really how do we educate you on your finances? I believe one of the old suit shops had an educated customer is our best
right.
customer. You know, I think it's that model of, you know, and part of what we want to do in the future for training for SunTrust is moving from, you know, we call our people teammates. So we have teammate training, and then we have kind of the vendors, contractors that we have to train in terms of doing business. And then we have our clients, you know, in terms of how do we provide them training, not only on our products and services, but just how to be a better consumer of financial, you know, stuff in the whole environment.
So your objective is to get the consumer to think financially minded and you as a resource for them rather than just the place where their money is and they're getting it in, putting it in and taking it out?
I mean, if you think about when you deal with a bank, usually it's at some emotional part of your life. I mean, there's the operational stuff, checks in, checks out, that kind
right.
of stuff, right?
Yeah, but going to get that loan, that gets emotional.
Exactly, especially if it's your first car note. I mean, you know,
right.
I want that car. It's so wrapped up, and that's my first car. Or it's a child's education. You want a college loan, or you want to do something with your house, or you're taking care of your elderly parents, and they have a life event, and you've got to deal with all of that stuff. So usually when we deal with people other than the operational stuff, it's an emotional moment. And so how do we prepare our people to really help somebody through that process?
I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised that an organization of your size and complexity would be so open to and invested in getting specialized help. Like you said, you have someone who specializes in, or an organization that specializes in requirements, identifying requirements. Speak to that a little bit, because I find that a little surprising, candidly.
So I mean, one of the other things that we're going for the company is operational efficiency, right? And so, you know, roles and responsibilities, knowing your job, of those kinds of things. So we've got the organization set up to process, work through it, versus kind of the hero model, I mean, a lot of times in the training world, you deal with the hero model where it's like, I'm the one person and I'm going to do it all and it's going to be great. And really that limits you to the skill set of that one individual.
Right.
Right. And so the world that we live in, which includes social media, high-end video, high-end audio, you know, web-based training, learning management integration, you know, specialty skills in training that's just not the run-of-the-mill kind of stuff. I mean, to get the best of breed into the marketplace, into SunTrust training marketplace, we've got to be able to do that.
I mean, just the sheer volume of, what would you call it, information, training materials, those job aids must be incredible. And so the you have like a knowledge management or learning management system that you have to stay on top of?
I think the step one in that world is clear ownership of the asset. Because when you look at an organization, you say, okay, we've got all this stuff. Who owns this stuff? And a lot of times, if you ask that question, people will start looking at each other.
Right.
Right, like, oh, I don't know. You own it. Do you own it? You know, I don't know. You kind of point the finger. So, you know, we make sure that we clearly align that web-based training to an internal HR owner. You know, and so this person owns this. And then we also make sure that the external owner in the business understands that they own it. And they're responsible for the care, feed, and watering of that asset. Because if you invest $25,000 in building a web-based training, right, and then you let it sit on the vine, it'll just die. So, you know, in terms of you don't want that information to atrophy, you want it to be taken care of. And so, you know, ILT, you have trainers that will love it a little bit in the process, where technology assets, the minute you put it out there, it's basically atrophying. So how do you say, is it a quarterly cycle? Is it a half-year cycle? You know, what is a cycle? When do we look at it? When do we review it? You know, and in the compliance world, that is absolutely required.
Now, how do you decide whether it's working or not? How is there an accountability element to this stuff?
Yeah, so you know, we look at things from, I look at it the same way as a car. You know, as you have initial quality in a car, right? Does it run? Is all the panels straight?
Right.
And then you have long-term quality, which is over 10,000 miles, how many issues that we had? Over 100,000 miles, how many issues that we've had? So we do look at initial quality against a build spec. You know, we have a very clear design process
right. That
says we're buying this quality level, this
and
fidelity.
This is our expectations.
Right. And then we make sure as that project is going out the door that it meets all those things.
Mm-hmm.
We do, you know, level two assessments in there. So obviously if everybody's failing the level two assessments, we go.
There's a problem.
Problem, right. You know, either the content or the kind of baseline that we set for knowledge. We do level ones, which are commonly called smile sheets, kind of surveys, which really gives you kind of feedback from what people think of the experience. You know, it's not that predictive in success, but it does say whether or not people are enjoying the.
Like the engagement.
The engagement, yeah, and that is important. You want people to have a positive light of your training. We do level threes and level fours in specific situations where the investment would warrant that. On a normal basis, we don't do that. Now, SunTrust really is coming from a business of relationships. And so when people are unhappy with a product or service, they're going to tell you. Right. And so how do you leverage those relationships to get feedback in specific situations and then modify? The key thing that I've really been impressed by SunTrust over the last couple of years is their ability to prioritize projects. We used to 4 years ago say everything's important. And so we would try to do everything. And when you do everything, maybe you don't do everything as good as you should. And so over the last couple of years, it's been a process of saying, you know, give me the top 50 projects in the company. Let's make sure everybody's focused on that. And they've aligned the money and the focus on those projects. And that keeps being a going forward moment. But they've really stepped up in how they prioritize, how they fund, and then how that follows through.
So that portfolio of projects dictates to some degree the curricula that get developed and placed into this system?
Absolutely. Because, you know, when we talk about building a full curricula for a job role, it's a significant investment, right? And it takes a significant amount of time. So the previous year to that process, we'll sit down and say, this job role needs a curriculum. Need, you know, courses, you know, instructor-led training kind of moment. And we'll put a funding number out there. It's going to take X dollars to do this. And then that goes through a process where all the executives review that to say, is this something, is this money, you know, is this a worthwhile spend for the organization?
Right.
So that, you know, it actually gets tagged. And then when we go to execute, people go, everybody knows about the project.
And they bought in and they're all on board.
The thing that it also has done really well is it is exposed where people fund only silos of a project.
Is that the way it used to be, or that's?
I'm I can't speak before I got there.
There's pre-Wayne. Right. There's now.
Right.
But in any business, it's very common to see the technology side funded.
Right.
Right. And they go, okay, where's the training for this? nobody funded it, right? So you see that. And so when you go through a formalized planning process like we've put in place, that really exposes that. So you can't go forward with a project unless you have the technology money, you have the business money, and you have the HR money if it's required. So that's really helped in making sure that we're fully funded to do the things that we need to do.
Now, as a teammate on the rise, beyond these courses that are driven by the demands of this portfolio of projects, do I also have an opportunity to kind of go and shop for courses that might help me advance, or do I get together with my manager and build a development curriculum? Is there some of that in this system as well?
So we put in success factors in a couple years ago, and that does allow a manager to deploy training to a specific learner. Uh-huh. So if you're having a development session and the manager says, well, you know, you really should take a public speaking course, they can search the catalog, and then they can assign you a due date so that they can help manage that process. With other areas for example, technology. Technology is such a wide area that we can't possibly offer every course that everybody's going to need. So we have relationships with catalog owners that say, you know, here's the 5,000 courses, you know, whatever it is,
right.
You know, A++ to, you know, whatever arcane language you want to learn, that they can then go out, and then we pay a la carte. So it's what is core to your training, what requires customized training versus what you can buy off the shelf. And then if you're buying it off the shelf, you know, how much flexibility do you need in the specific content?
So how did you get into this line of work? You always do this kind of thing?
You know, I think I'm fairly rare in that I've always done this, right? I didn't. You know, most people you hear in this business start out doing something else. You know, I wanted to be a teacher. I got a degree in education, was going to be a history teacher. I went right to grad school. I went to Georgia State under Skip Atkinson. And so he put me at AT&T in an internship when I was basically 22 years old. And it's basically taken off from there.
So internship in HR?
No, it was specifically for AT&T. It was building a electronic performance support system for one of their projects. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'm an interesting combination. I also have an MBA. It's an interesting combination of systems thinking for me, as well as like the human aspect. Mm-hmm. And the systems thinking part to me is what is really interesting. It's the mass media. It's how you build an infrastructure to deliver all this training to people in an efficient manner. So whether it's a learning management system or it's a human capital system, you know, how you make that all work. Because people come in, they put lots of money in those things. And, I mean, I've seen LMS projects fail left and right. Right. So how do you come in and actually make that work on a time frame, on a budget, and then say to the business owners that got sold that plan, that looks good. Because a lot of times after we do put something out there, they're like, that's not what you told us it was going to be, and that's not what you want.
I have to share with you. My wife has an advanced degree in learning technology, and the only professor name that I know and remember that she shares, and she just thinks the world of this guy, Skip Atkinson.
Yeah, he was – there's people in your life, and you meet them, and he was one of the few people I actually met and said, I'm going to remember this man the rest of my life. Right, it's like sometimes you don't know until 10 years later. You go, man, that person really helped me out. But Skip really took an interest, and also Steve Harmon, who's there currently, I believe he also did some great stuff with me. So I don't want to step on any toes here.
Don't want to diss Steve.
Yeah, don't want to diss Steve. But yeah, I mean that program really set me up, and I don't think I really even knew what instructional technology was when I was entering the program. To be honest with you, I just knew that I wanted to get an education. And I wanted a master's degree, and it sounded interesting, and really it took it off from there. And I certainly didn't understand the business impacts. So, you know, I think the business world has fit my personality a little better than K-12. So, yeah, it's really been living the dream, you know, in this world. Really enjoyed this career.
Now, are there any special challenges in the SunTrust world when you have, like, you have a big corporate entity of SunTrust, but you also have, like, branches where there could be just a handful of people?
Yeah, it's, you know, surprisingly similar to any retail organization where you've got the strategy up high that sits in corporate, and then you've got the people that are in, you know, client facing.
Right, they're the ones dealing on the front lines.
Absolutely. The other challenging thing for SunTrust is that you've got people of various skill set and nature. I mean, you've got a broker that deals with, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars of investments, and then you've got a teller who's dealing with $25 checks. Right, and those are two different types of people that you have to train. Right. I mean, they're just really radically different, and so it is quite complex to make that all work, because you know, and then also the numbers are very difficult. So with a smaller, with a wealth area, we have smaller numbers. It's hard to justify the investment from a number standpoint.
Well, it is with the numbers of amount they're dealing with.
Well, but that's where you have to change the equation. Typically, we look at, you know, in terms of if we run 10,000 people through a training, and it costs this much amount to build that training, there's your kind of your number, right? But if you've got six or seven people that are doing that job, but they're bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars.
Exactly. You can't ignore that.
Yeah, it's a totally different style. And that's where you've got to flex. And, you know, the leadership model has always dealt with that. Mm-hmm. You know, because the leadership at the executive levels is different than at the mid-tiers and as the base levels. And so as the importance goes up, the investment, I wouldn't say the investment goes up, but the investment per person goes up because the numbers start to shrink.
Now, you've had a pivot, a strategy change in your design and development over the past year. What was driving that change? Speak to that a little bit, if you would.
So, you know, the cycle of outsourcing FTE development is something that we deal with quite often. And it's really trying to figure out the needs of the business at the moment. So when I joined the bank, you know, they had just come off a major change, and it was the goal I had was to rebuild the learning organization from a development standpoint. So we hired a lot of really qualified individuals and started producing a lot of materials. But what we found was that the feast and famine aspect of what we do was really hard to manage. So whether I needed 10 instructional designers to do the work or I need 50, you know, that would change on a monthly basis. And so if you have, you know, full-time people sitting at their desk, you know, what do you do with
the other 40 you're not using?
Right. Or then you find yourself in a deficit and you tell a business, well, I'm sorry, I'd like to help you,
right,
but I can't. Or it'll take me 3 weeks to get a contractor. Can you hang around for 3 weeks? And that's not a message that is taken really, you know, sure, I have plenty of time.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Yeah. So really we had to figure out an environment where we could scale really quickly up and down. And so that really drove a different kind of view of the organization. So we moved to an outsourcing relationship. We do with GP partners mostly. Of course, we do best of breed, so we do other vendors that need specific areas. But the value that they bring is they can scale up and down. And with executional excellence, they want to tag the money against the projects. Mm-hmm. So it helps with accounting as well. So this project comes in, this funding gets the tag to it, we work through the vendor, we tag, you know, and it all kind of flows. The other thing that we found is that in a company the size of SunTrust, you know, we could not afford to bring in specific media specialists. So let's say a flash artist, right? We couldn't justify having a flash guy on staff.
Like full-time, right?
Yeah, full-time. Just couldn't do it. And part-time relationships are kind of dicey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's a lot of learned, like, you know, you bring a new person in.
Then you got to spend all this time re-educating. They got to learn your systems and all the little idiosyncrasies.
Mm-hmm. And then the first thing won't work, and then it's a lot of stress.
That learning curve.
Yep. So that's the other thing that the vendor brings, in that, you know, they have those people on staff. But
and they're up to speed, kind of just waiting.
Absolutely. Right. So we bring them on part-time, you know, we bring them in for, you know, a fractional part of their salary, and it works well. We're probably 8 months into the process, and, you know, there's some lessons learned from it. It's challenging. The major shift from an FTE world to a vending world is the contractual nature of a project, right? So if you have an FTE, a project is halfway through, the client, you know, says this is not a priority anymore, let's kill it. Nobody really cares. The person stops working on it. They kind of archive it, and it goes away. And so we did a lot of that, and we canceled a ton of projects when we had FTEs. Now we sign a work order with the specific line of business, and it's not a legal contract, but it's a commitment to invest. And, you know, so what that has done is it made people to think, okay, so if I'm going to do this project, I'm going to do this project.
Right, now you're
committed.
Do it.
And our cancellations of projects have gone from, I'd say, 30% down to like
5%. Oh, wow, 5%. That's huge.
Yeah, so it really has brung them, you know, it's changed behavior in that people are committed to projects. The challenging, though, is that they're also feeling if I miss anything, you know, is it an upcharge? You know, so they're really careful about how they do things. But some of that doesn't feel so good the first time you do a project with a new client. So
you're doing something right because you won the 2012 Best Award. What was that process like?
I think the best part about awards process is, you know, winning them is nice, don't get me wrong. But the interesting part about any awards process, it's that moment of stepping on the scale in the morning. Yeah, how did I do this week? When you step on that scale, right? And you're like, oh, I didn't do good this week. That scale's not where I want it to be. And so looking at that, basically the form to fill out, you're like, okay, so it really makes you focus on the metrics that matter to the industry, and you really have to dive in there and kind of self-evaluate. And, you know, for us, it was really an experience where we've made some great strides over the last couple of years, especially in the leadership area. So, you know, that's good, and also in the infrastructure area. So it was very exciting to fill out that application. It was very exciting to win a spot on that list. But really, you know, how we do work for our clients, that's really what we are more interested in, how we judge ourselves. But again, those experiences are always good to have you judge yourself.
Right.
Thing.
And was it very time consuming to do all that paperwork to fill out?
It is. It is. I mean, it's one of those things where if you, for us, we were doing all these things to do the right thing. And so everything, the question's a little slightly off from right. how you do it. And so you have to align that versus a situation where you build your system to answer the questionnaire.
Right.
So, but yeah, it does take time. But again, if you look at it as a development opportunity to say, okay, how are we doing this? And there's areas that you don't do, right? And you say, oh, that's a great question to say, why am I not doing
right.
this? So again, it's that step on the scale moment to see how am I doing, and that's always interesting.
Well, you know, Lee and I, in our business, we've been putting a great deal of attention, particularly lately, on why we do what we do. And then we're crafting that for ourselves internally, and we continue to try to refine the message that we bring out to the marketplace. So you guys are out there in the market talking to them about discovering their path to financial well-being. Is there an effort, and if so, how are you guiding that effort to make that translate to your training and really have it impact the culture?
One of the efforts we had last year that will continue this year that's interesting is training our teammates on their own financial well-being.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's not, yeah. I mean, mostly when you think of training, you think of, okay, this is how I do my job, this is how I have critical skill
right.
sets, competencies. This is, you know, if you're a teammate of ours, and do you know what a credit score is?
I do. Unfortunately, I know exactly what one is.
I mean, that's the kind of thing, especially with we look right. at, you know, certain job roles, they could bring, you know, young individuals into the workforce.
Right.
You know, so do they know what a credit score is? Now, if you walk into any financial situation, bank, you know, broker, you want them knowing these things, just common sense. You want them knowing your products and services
right.
really well, and that's what we train them specifically. But we also they're starting to take the opportunity to offer them enrichment, you know, activities for themselves. And that's where you take that and you say the next step, obviously, for us is to go maybe take that to the clients. You know, so we're trying to figure out
right,
that.
But once they have it and they live it and they've done it, then it's easier for them to even engage in conversations or look for opportunities to create conversations. Maybe when somebody just says something offhand, they can relate it back to, you know, all the stuff you guys do. That's pretty smart, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good investment in your people.
It both sides. There's the business side of it, and then there's also the caring about the teammates side,
right.
which is, again, something that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about curricula, obviously very extensive. And for you guys, even beyond what you already have, you have mechanisms to go out and get exactly what you need when you need it from best in class. Let's get real tactical for a moment, if you will. Talk to me about platforms, media. I heard you mention web-based, instructor-led. How do you decide what medium, what platform to use for which? And are you playing in the mobile arena at all?
We do play in the mobile arena slightly. You know, we have, I mean, so the kind of the two big technical pushes that we have this year, you know, one is tablet technology, right? We've got to get the tablet technology figured out for the bank. I know mm-hmm. that's in the process because, you know, in terms of handing out laptops or desktops, that's just not, it's not the future. Also in terms of, you know, what we spend on binders in classrooms. I mean, do you have any idea what a binder costs? You really don't want to know what a binder costs.
I bet you know.
Yeah. The binder you get at a conference that you stick in your car that right. then you throw in the trash, you don't want to know how much that costs. You really don't. So, yeah, so part of it is if we had tablets in the classroom, you know, we could avoid having all those printing costs. And that's also lead time.
Right.
You know, so it takes a couple, you know, weeks to get those binders there. So cutting down, so that's like lead time, cost, that's all good, right? So we're doing that. you know, again, we launched the new LMS probably about 2 years ago, so that's going fairly well. That's modernized. The human capital side, we're in a project to kind of modernize that. Web-based training, we do kind of entry-level really well, and then we do mid-tier pretty good. You know, the high-end stuff, we're starting to dabble in now. You know, with a bank, part of the challenge there is bandwidth, you know, going to all the branches. Some branches have great bandwidth, some don't. You know, so it's and also environment to take it. So that's kind of a challenging thing. It's kind of the McDonald's problem. If they work in a McDonald's, where are they going to take a web-based training?
Right.
Yeah. It's those kinds of things you have to overcome on a structural level.
Do you build like kind of an editorial calendar of like how you're going to attack next year or 6 months? Like, what's kind of the timeline that you look at?
It's a lot around the funding cycle. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the world that we've got now with prioritization, if you don't hit that funding cycle, you lose a year.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of that you get in the fall of the year, and that's where you're pitching your project, you're socializing, say, this is what we need to do.
But so you're thinking about today, right now, you're thinking about in the fall, you're going to be asking for money. So you got to start kind of looking for what initiatives that you're going to be taking.
And absolutely. So in the summer, that's when you're social. I mean, that's when you're actually informally pitching your ideas to people to create that groundswell. Because if you come in cold, it's like, that's an interesting idea. I've never heard of that. Chance of getting funded is not very good.
So you got to build your case.
Yeah. And so it's, I've heard people say that, a lot of times when a chaotic episode happens, people are viewing, we got to fix this. The thing is, when that happens to you, never be afraid to leverage that going forward to get funding. Right. So part of what got us funding for the new LMS is when the old one crashed. Right, so it's not something you when you have those episodes, it's not something you hide or try to keep behind the coach. You say, okay, this is a failing piece of technology, or this.
So
is
we better jump on this now. We're in crisis.
We're in crisis, but you got to leverage that crisis moment to say we need to fix this.
Right,
and here's the way forward. Right, but you've got to have that ready so when it happens, you can leverage that moment. And people say, yeah, we need to do this, and I like your solution. Let's go with that versus just dealing with the chaos. And so that's the key with a lot of the major investments.
Well, and he's not going to these executives with a chapter out of Wayne's World. I mean, he has business drivers directly coming from this portfolio of high priority projects. It's already been declared. I think you've cracked the code on how to navigate the appropriation committee.
I mean, that is a key of what we do. I mean, it's explaining the value.
Yeah.
You have to explain the value.
You got to make that business case.
Every year. Uh-huh. Every year. Because it's one thing. The other challenge is you get good at building stuff, right? And it's kind of like any tech company that's been in business a long time. You get good at building stuff, but are you good at maintaining it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's really the challenge that you have long term. Because you make a $1 million investment in something, and then next year you don't do any updates.
Right, so then that's kind of silly.
Yeah, it's the model of if you can afford $1 million house but can't afford the maintenance.
Right,
yeah.
Maybe you really can't afford $1 million house.
Well, you don't. You have an $800,000 house, then you have a $600,000 house. Right, that kind of model.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio today, man. We got to have you back sometime. This is fun stuff.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and our guest this morning, Wayne Zitch with SunTrust. And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights. Although we style.